Rick, do you think people tune into this for your schedule?
Yeah. Well, we're, not, we're not on the air.
Well, it's all on the air. What do you think? I'm turning it off and on as we go?
All right. I thought we were just chatting. Chatting Kathy's over here.
This is the Heart of the Rivalry. It's a show produced by The Blade. We talk about college football. You're the expert on the show. Are you familiar with how it works now?
What's our first topic?
So when we talk about the Heart of the Rivalry, we talk about four teams. What are the teams? Ohio State.
Michigan?
Bowling Green.
Toledo.
Those are the four.
We got them first try.
We got all four first try. I am your host, Phil Kaplan. This is, of course, Blade sports columnist David Briggs, who the man who stands above the rest of college football, the pavement on which the highways of college football exist.
David, I literally do stand above, but not figuratively.
Okay, welcome to week six. I figured we'd start out just doing a quick recap. We're now 6 days away from what was a tremendous college football weekend. Vanderbilt beating Alabama outside of our coverage area, but gotta be the highlight. Gotta be the highlight.
How do you lose all the goodwill you built as the new Alabama coach in 7 days?
Lose to Vanderbilt.
Lose to Vanderbilt. The craziest stat I saw, Nick Saban, in his entire tenure at Alabama, gave up 13 points to Vanderbilt. Kalen DeBoer, first game. 40 points. Vanderbilt could have scored more. Just absolutely. And it just speaks to the culture that Nick Saban built. I mean, it's Kalen DeBoer, obviously an incredible coach, but that's not a game that a Nick Saban team loses. He was the expert of, you know, overcoming that rat poison, as he called it. Yeah, it's certainly showed there's not only a new era in Alabama, but maybe even a new era in college football. I think the interesting thing is everybody thought the transfer portal and the NIL era was going to make Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia even better. The rich would get richer. The best players in the country would all go to the top teams. In reality, it's probably made the college football world flatter, and that's why we saw Vanderbilt beating Alabama. You know, Alabama doesn't have the same depth that it used to. The guys who are backups and third stringers, they're transferring to a school like a Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's star quarterback, Diego Pavia, he's a transfer from New Mexico State. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's certainly going to help the big teams in some ways. Ohio State, you know, went out and bought some of the best players in the country. But in terms of overall depth and maybe flattening the college football landscape, I think that was a fascinating maybe illustration of where we are.
If you missed that game and you only saw the final score or some highlights of students carrying the goalpost down the street, it was not a fluke game. Yeah. Vanderbilt took it straight to Alabama. They had great play calls. You don't want to say, oh, they have equal talent, but they didn't get pushed around. It's not like there was some fluke stuff and Vanderbilt just won
and
crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of field goal celebrations, what do you think is the best destination for a field goal? The Vanderbilt students took it to downtown Nashville, threw it in the river.
The river is
Toledo,
pretty good.
Toledo fans, when they tear down the goalpost, I'm trying to think of the last time. Certainly against Pitt, when they beat number 9 Pitt in 2003, they took it, threw it in the Ottawa River.
You got to put it in
water. Sometimes
at Mizzou,
they take it to the bar downtown and they cut it. But it's like, where do you get a saw? Why are drunken college students? Should drunken college students be having a saw trying to hack through the goalpost?
Well, I want to say, you know, you have time.
Yeah.
It takes some time to move a goalpost to a bar.
Right.
So you can call ahead and you can organize
the circular
tools.
Sauce,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What do you think it would take for Ohio State fans to feel enough at this point to carry the goalpost down to the Olentangy?
That's interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen that. I don't know where you would...
They would dump it in Mirror Lake, maybe?
Yeah. Well, Ohio State's very good about protecting the goalposts.
Yep.
I've never seen the students on them, at least in the last 30 years. I think they used to have the collapsible ones. If they don't now, they certainly have about 30 security guards around it right away. So, but if they did... Yeah, I would say Mirror Lake, because Mirror Lake's more in the heart of campus. Olentangy River's the other way.
It's a little closer, though.
Right, and you don't want to pollute the Olentangy River. You know, Mirror Lake is already a complete cesspool that looks like the Maumee River. So,
shout out to the Maumee River. Okay, let's do a quick recap. Ohio State sort of a snoozer against Iowa. They keep Ohio State keeps doing this thing where they just are like slow simmering teams. We got another great one-handed catch though from Jeremiah Smith.
We did, and Ohio State I think is the first ranked team to allow a touchdown to Iowa in at least 2 years. So. Has to feel like a loss, right? I mean, 28-point win, but no. It's actually an interesting thing. There was an ESPN columnist who does a rundown of the country, kind of made that joke. And Joel Klatt and some of the people on the Ohio State beat and just Ohio State fans took complete offense. Obviously a joke. I mean, it feels like a loss because you gave up a touchdown to Iowa, even in a blowout win. And Joel Klatt said, just talking about the SEC bias on SEC spin, e-spin, and just all the absurdity. I mean, there's if there is an SEC bias, it's deserved. The SEC is great, so there.
Give your coaches something to do, though. Hey, we gave up a score.
Right, absolutely. Got to have some motivation going into the big game this week. So, yeah.
Okay.
Snoozer, and now the alarm goes off, and it doesn't get
much bigger than this. Yeah, this is the big test. We'll get to that later in the show. We want to.
I can't wait.
I know you cannot. There is something more pressing to talk about than the Ohio State-Oregon Ducks matchup, and that is the arrival of Jack Tuttle. Mm. So Michigan goes out to Washington, loses. If there was ever a more overranked number 10 team, I can't think of one. I'm sure that we could go back and find one. But it seemed like Michigan was destined to lose that game from the start, and now they're playing Jack Tuttle.
Yeah. Third quarterback. Michigan goes into the season with Davis Warren. He's terrible. Second quarterback, Alex Orji. He's terrible.
Seems like a good scat back.
Yeah. Third quarterback, Jack Tuttle, I believe in his seventh year of college. It's kind of...
Shades of Jack Golke?
Yeah, shades of Joe Montana.
Okay.
No, I mean, by Michigan's standards this year, quarterback, I mean, God, I mean, he might as well put him in Canton in the Hall of Fame. But, for a little bit, it did look like they got a spark from Jack Tuttle, and it seems like he will be the quarterback going forward. You at least need something. You need some sort of passing threat. I mean, no matter how physical Michigan is and no matter how good their run game is, and it's not great, you need something to balance that. So, looks like they found something. Obviously, Tuttle had those two huge turnovers late, kind of put him in position to win. Then he lost the game. But maybe Michigan has something.
They have a Jack Tuttle is what they have. The University of Toledo beat the University of Miami Red Hawks this week. Those are both preseason MAC favorites. What do you think this game tells us?
I think it tells us Toledo at its best is clearly the class of the MAC, because Toledo, even when they weren't at their best, still kind of dominated Miami. Miami won the MAC last year. They have returned the most starters in the MAC. They were the runaway MAC favorite. They've struggled a little bit early on this year, but still a very formidable opponent. Tough as hell, very physical, and Toledo answered the call on both sides. Really impressed by Toledo's defensive line. Just completely, they did what Miami does to other teams, just completely shut down the run, stifled everything. And what I meant by them not being at their best is this is how much Toledo dominated the game. 30-20 doesn't seem like a big margin, but it, as Chuck Martin, the Miami coach, said, this could have been a 40-point game. So at halftime, Toledo had fumbled four times, thrown two interceptions, and dropped an easy touchdown pass that ended in a field goal. And they were still winning by two touchdowns at halftime. So
Shooting yourself in both feet.
That's how much they were in control. So a lot to work on for Toledo, but a good first statement.
Outstanding. Lastly, we drop in on Bowling Green. We thought BG was really cooking. They took Texas A&M and Penn State right to the mat. Then they lose to Old Dominion and barely beat Akron, which is there's the class of the MAC in Toledo, and the trash of the MAC is probably the Zips.
Sure, yeah, opposite ends of the spectrum. And we thought Bowling Green would be right up there and maybe even ahead of Toledo after those back-to-back great performances at Penn State and Texas A&M. But, you know, in year six of the Scott Loeffler era, I kind of thought the up and down nature of the roller coaster would have flattened out a little bit by now and there would be more consistency, but we're still seeing those issues. BG looks so good 1 week, then they lose to Old Dominion the next week at home, and then on Saturday, Akron's improved, but you know, Bowling Green needs a late touchdown to pull that out, and that's a nail biter.
Save it from the fire.
That's a nail biter. So yeah, big one against Northern Illinois this week. That'll tell us a lot about where BG's at.
You want to do the halftime segment?
Sure.
Okay, so this was reported a couple weeks ago, but I thought it would be fun to talk about, partially because of Kareem Hunt's return to the Kansas City Chiefs. But their coach, Andy Reid, said he loves watching Tuesday night action and even has discovered some players there. What'd you think about that story?
Yeah, it's hilarious. I mean, if you had told me which one of the 32 NFL coaches is probably has his popcorn watching Tuesday night action, would he not have been the one you
He'd
said?
He'd probably be one you guess.
But yeah, no, it's great. I think all the coaches have action. You hear that all the time from NFL coaches. They're, you know, they're working late in the office on Tuesday and Wednesday nights, probably till midnight, but they all have the Mac games on TV. A little bit of scouting, a little bit of background noise, a little bit of just pure fun. And yeah, and
he found a player,
right? Who and he found he found a player. He said that's how he found Carson Steele, former Ball State running back. And he transferred to UCLA.
Straight destroyer of
was
a name.
And a straight destroyer of a player. Yep. I mean, I remember watching him at Toledo, just on and for Ball State against Toledo. Just I've never seen anybody run harder, and he honestly kind of. This is an incredible compliment to a current Toledo running back, Connor Walenzek from Toledo. He reminds me of Perrysburg's own. He's a sophomore running back at Toledo, and he's kind of their short yardage guy, just such a powerful bowling ball, fearless runner. Connor's not anywhere near Carson Steele, at least not yet. Great player, but he has that kind of fearless, just not afraid to shy into, does not shy away from contact, just plows you over, loves the contact, and that's kind of what Carson Steele reminds me of. But yeah, that's kind of a cool window into just all the great Mac players in the league. And by the way, Quinyon Mitchell, first round pick out of Toledo this year, cornerback, went to the Eagles. Slaying it, unlike his Darius Slay, his counterpart on the
That's
corner
right.
in Philadelphia. But yeah,
Quinyon's got some big news.
Quinyon got the key to the city for Mayor Wade on Saturday. That was cool. So yeah, and nobody's a better representative for Toledo and the Mac than Quinyon. You know, he
seems like a hard worker.
Had all the opportunities to leave for more money after his sophomore year and decided to come back in Toledo. Had a big year, All American year. Shows you can do it in the Mac. You don't have to chase the brightest spotlight. You can do it right in the Mac. And Andy Reid will see you on Tuesday night.
That is a faction of the Maction. All right, that's been our halftime segment. When we come back, we're going to scout ahead and finally. We will be able to talk about Ohio State's visit out to Oregon.
Oh, thank God.
Let's go back to the Oregon Ducks and the Ohio State Bucks. What do you think is going to happen in this game?
I don't know. It should be fun. This is the big one we've all been waiting for, at least as an early season measuring stick for two of the top teams in the country, especially Ohio State. I like Ohio State in this matchup. I think they have the talent, the tools to attack where Oregon might be weaker in spots. Ohio State, one of the top rushing offenses in the country. Oregon's really played only one real game, and they beat Boise State by a field goal earlier this year. And Boise State's running back, Ashton Gentry.
Barry Sanders numbers.
He's awesome, and he's incredible. He might be the best running back in the country. But he rushed for 192 yards. Ohio State would like to think they have two of the best backs in the country as well. So you'd think there might be a little vulnerability there. I think Ohio State will be able to move the ball pretty well against Oregon. And then on the other side, Dylan Gabriel, transfer from Oklahoma, great passer, great offense. They play with great tempo. But Ohio State's he's under pressure. I think he throws about 20 completion percentage is about 25% less. If Ohio State can get some heat on him, you have to like their chances there as well. And this is the kind of game those guys like JTT and Jack Sawyer and those guys on the defensive line came back for. Obviously getting paid a lot of money to come back, but also for games like this.
To show
what they've got. So if Ohio State can bring the heat and get their running game going, I like Ohio State -3. I think it's
Tease it out if you want.
But yeah, Oregon, great team. But God, with the pressure on Ryan Day and this Ohio State team, I you would expect them certainly want to make a statement, and I expect they can.
The University of Michigan, thankfully, has a bye. They'll put in the Jack Tuttle package. Then Toledo goes to your favorite stadium in the MAC, visiting Buffalo. What do you think about that game?
It's just
a trap.
In any circumstance, it would be a trap game. you know, it's just a weird stadium, as we talked about last week, and just kind of a, where weird things happen. Toledo doesn't usually play well there. A couple of years ago, Toledo had a big lead there, then blew it. DQ, Daquan Finn gets hurt, and just kind of has weird vibes. And that's
the stadium's fault.
Yeah, that's the stadium's fault. That's just the house of horrors that UB Stadium is. And then you factor in that UB Buffalo seems fairly competent this year. They were expected to be one of the worst teams in the league. They hire Pete Lembo, former Ball State coach. He's been an assistant for many years since then. But I just have no idea what's going to happen in this game because I never have any idea. But especially here because I don't know if there's a more unpredictable team so far in the country than Buffalo. They go to I think Buffalo might have the cake here. They go to Northern Illinois, which was coming off the win in Notre Dame, and they win. And then the next game, they lose at home 47-3 to UConn. Or I don't think it was at home, but 47-3 to UConn. And they've had some, it's just a weird game that I would not feel comfortable
putting your own money on, is that what you're saying?
I'm not going to bet on Toledo anyway. I'm not going to bet on the teams we cover.
But if you were out there and you were selling.
If one were to, I would stay away from this.
In our last game to scout,
oh dear,
I will be going to Dwight Perry Stadium in person as a Blade photographer to shoot the Bowling Green Falcons playing the Northern Illinois Huskies. What do you think of this game? What should I look to shoot?
Well, Phil, it's going to be a tough one. Northern Illinois, up and down, obviously, but they have one of the best defenses in the country. Their running game's good. Bowling Green has a susceptible in the run game. So I think it'll come down to the wire, just a very physical game between two physical teams. And must win for BG, I would say, just kind of for the momentum of the program going forward.
This has been another outstanding and severe episode of the Heart of the Rivalry. Very extreme. We are your extreme Heart of the Rivalry hosts. He's David Briggs. I'm Phil Kaplan. We'll see you next week. I'll bring some good shots back from Bowling Green.
I love it. I can't wait to see him.
All right.